We have today a guest who is a returning friend, Elizabeth Hanen, known to many as Principal Harp of the Philadelphia Orchestra, but she has also established herself on both sides of the Atlantic as a virtuosic solo artist of the highest caliber. Welcome to Crossover, Elizabeth, once again.
Thank you so much, Jill. It's great to be here.
Well, I was so thrilled when we finally got this album. We had been talking about this. It, I think, came out in May.
Yes, that's correct. Just in May.
Just in May. And it's a daunting program that you're playing. It's how many harp concertos are on here?
Three concertos spanning three centuries.
Yes. Well, I don't know for our audience, these are written for the modern harp. Is that right?
Yes, they're all written for the concert grand harp, although the Albrechtsberger was probably premiered on a single action pedal harp as opposed to the one I play on.
So which just, is the double action.
Right, a little less chromatic, that's mm-hmm. all.
Now, let's talk a little bit about you and your career as a principal harp of a great, great symphony orchestra. That in itself is quite a thing. But what are the demands that they make on you beyond playing just, repertoire with harp? You have to do some solo work as well, don't you, yearly?
They invite me to play a solo occasionally with the orchestra, and it might be a conductor who invites me. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the last time I played a solo, Rafael Frubeck de Burgos invited me to perform the Torina, the Tema y Variaciones by Torina, which he orchestrated.
I see.
And used to tour with Nicanor Zabaleta.
Oh, the great harpist, of course.
Mm-hmm. So that was his idea, which was wonderful because I think it means much more when a conductor and a soloist collaborate on choosing the work, and it just meant a lot, especially coming from somebody like him.
Was that something that you had to learn from scratch, or had you had that in your repertoire?
Oh, certainly from scratch. Yes, yeah. This was one I had never even heard of. So yes. It was wonderful for him to bring light to it.
Well, you are involved in so very, very much. I don't think people are aware. They look at the harp and the orchestra, and of course it's very pretty, and they hear occasionally when it's exposed some beautiful sounds, but it is very, very important. And it's also very important to have an arm or two arms of your career around the repertoire that is for solo harp, and that I think is something that you take very, very seriously. You've also commissioned some works, haven't you?
Yes, I think that's maybe what's unusual about me as an orchestral harpist is most times there's so much repertoire to master, and just in the orchestral realm, that the solo playing is a whole different thing, and it's difficult to wrap your hands around it all. So I just enjoy it so much, and because of my teaching position at Curtis,
yes.
and I have these outstanding young musicians to train, I feel that it's even more my my responsibility to not only know as much of our repertoire, but to also aspire to commission works. And just because I love the instrument, and I want to see all these great composers writing for it.
And for our audience, you studied with Susan McDonald, is that right?
That's correct.
She was your maître.
Yes, at Indiana University.
Yes, Indiana University. And you appeared on the scene, and we knew right away, there's a star. So Elias Parrish Alvarez, okay, he was very, very important in the formation of harp technique, I think, at the time that he began to play and to write for the harp. He really improved or enlarged certainly the scope of it as an instrument, isn't that right?
Absolutely. He was just a pivotal individual for the instrument, just like Paganini or Liszt. He really was on the same level as those musicians,
mm-hmm.
and as highly revered. It was brought to my attention by David Booth, who plays, violin in the
sure.
Philadelphia Orchestra, my wonderful colleague. And he is just a wealth of information. And when we did the Parrish Alvarez for the first time with Wolfgang Sawallisch in 2004, he was just taken by the piece. And so he looked into who this Elias Parrish Alvarez is or was, and discovered he was somewhat of a, a hot ticket. Like, the women would follow him in caravans and throw undergarments at him and swoon over him. And so he was apparently quite a rock star in his day.
That was the 19th century, basically. I guess he was, mid-19th century, I suppose.
Right, 1808 to 1849, yes. I believe. And he was revered by Hector Berlioz as the Liszt of the harp. And I still firmly believe that he was the muse for many of Berlioz's harp parts because they're so difficult.
And, I was going to say, we can blame him,
yes,
can't we?
Exactly. Yes, I mean, blame him on one hand, but revere him on the other, because
course,
he really showcases the harp in a lot of his writings and Berlioz's writings. But Berlioz really, considered him the end-all for harp playing, and he featured Parrish Alvarez in salon concerts and in different sorts of venues. So he was very close colleagues with him.
And also, I think, wasn't he involved with Boxer? I think Boxer, who was also someone who wrote, technical etudes and so on for harp, to study harp, certainly.
Yes, Boxer was also another Englishman.
Yes.
So they were colleagues of sort. I can't remember exactly the years.
It's somewhere around there, because I think that was really the formation of that new, it was really a new harp technique. It was much more powerful, and of course you had the chromaticism that you couldn't have on the limiting harps of the earlier years. So you are playing this harp concerto in G minor. Did you have to do any editing on this when you got it?
That's an interesting question. As little as I had to, I did have to adjust a few things just because our harps that we play today, the strings are a little bit further apart and the string tension isn't quite as loose as it was then.
That was like the Baroque sound. It had very lower A, I think.
Right. And so, It wasn't quite the same instrument, although mechanically it was. But there are some things like where there are these descending scales and thirds where you cannot literally play them so close together. Mm. So you play them like an octave and a third.
Okay.
It's just little things like that.
Because I know there are edited editions of great works in all instruments, and people are really renowned for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one, and then now the Albrechtsberger, he's an earlier composer. Mm-hmm. What was the harp at that time? Was it a single action?
It was a single action, and as you know, the Mozart flute and harp concerto had already been written, and he wrote this piece, I think he was taken by the instrument and the sound of it, and I think so many things were being written for pianoforte at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you know that Albrechtsberger was some kind of a pedagogue to Beethoven.
Yes.
And so that influence is there a little bit in the music of that era. But the first time I heard this piece was when I was a child, and I had just started playing the harp, and I heard Nikanor Zabaleta again.
Yeah.
I refer to him, this old recording, and it just was the most beautiful, just simplistic music, and it had just such nice writing, and I had always wanted to play it. Yes, there's so much clarity in it, and so I love the piece.
Well, you love whatever you play. You always get that when I speak with you. You go beyond just the explanation. You can see it in your face, and the way you talk about the music, you really do love it, and you love the instrument, and it certainly comes through even in your performances. You've certainly made a place for yourself in the harp world. The Saint-Saëns, okay, that's romantic.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's what people expect.
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is our concert piece, like he did for so many other instruments. He really was wonderful about showcasing different instruments in the orchestra, and fortunately, he wrote us one too, and many people don't know about it. And it's lovely. When Rosen Milanoff and I recorded this, he likened it to more of a Baroque, homage Baroque piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's right. I think there's a lot of the Sarabande feeling and the slow movement. It's very beautiful. And
but it is romantic, though. It
yes,
certainly is,
it is
more florid. And I guess, again, we're talking about an instrument that is very, very different from any other instrument, because in order to get the chromatics on the harp, you have this, all of this pedal work that is involved. And people, I don't think, realize what is involved. They see this beautiful instrument and some lovely glissandos here and there. Mm-hmm. It's a very involved instrument. And so, your choice for this album, was heroic in a way. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And, it has come out now on the Davi label, and mm-hmm. they are a very, very fine recording company. This is a special album. Tell me a little bit about the dedication.
This concerto album, this recording, would not have been made possible without the amazing patronage of Miriam Klein, the late Miriam Klein. I had the opportunity of getting to know her when I used to live in my old apartment on Rittenhouse Square many years ago. And she took a liking to me for some reason. And
I wonder why.
She was the benefactor for this recording.
Just because?
We talked about it, and she says, oh, it's so important that you do these recordings. And I said, well, you know, to do a concerto recording these days with orchestras,
yes,
next to impossible.
Right.
It's only the big, big artists get to do it anymore. And so she made it become a reality. And,
which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just Elizabeth Hainan, Harp Concertos.
That's it.
The understatement here. So this is the first of many, is that right?
I certainly hope so. I was just discussing this the other day with some of my students, and then they asked me, you know, are you going to make another recording? They were so excited about this one, as I am. And so, yes, I'm considering either a Bach, solo Bach, or a Baroque recording, where I'm looking at Bach and Couperin and Scarlatti.
Early work.
Yes, mm-hmm. and just because I think the instrument lends such a great voice to those types of pieces, and you can sound like the guitar at times on
yes.
them, or the lute, and,
mm-hmm.
and it has, there's a lot to offer with the
coloring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very delicate.
Now, you just played with the International Harp Festival, is that right?
Or
the World Harp Congress. It's terribly impressive. Yes, it is, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
What did you play?
I was invited to play the Parish Elvars G minor mm-hmm. On this recording, and it's always the hardest crowd to play for, as all my colleagues can attest to.
Of course.
You know, you're playing for your peers, and you want to play your best, and it's that situation where you get thrown into just barely two rehearsals, and they have to do all these different concerti on the program.
Yes.
And so I'm certainly glad I had performed it many times before, because it's not one that you just want to sort of wing.
No, and you have to kind of refresh every time you have something
that.
Yeah. We don't even talk about the pressure of, as you say, an audience of your peers, which is really, really difficult, because they know exactly what you're doing. They may not be able to do it, but they certainly know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Elizabeth, you teach at Curtis. You also have a harp colony in the summer. Is that right?
Yes, the Saratoga Harp Colony in Saratoga Springs, New York. And then I also teach here at Temple at Boyer
yes.
School of Music.
What is the harp world like nowadays in terms of people interested in it?
Oh, small. I mean, I feel like with everything, you know, it's like the global village, you
mm-hmm.
know, it seems to affect all walks of life. And it's wonderful because we have so much information we can gain from one another.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope that we keep the schools of playing, though, this just from homogenizing. That's my biggest concern, I think, about in general with teaching and with especially in the strings. You definitely worry about that a little bit when people can get so much information, and now you can have these virtual master classes, which I think is wonderful. But there is something to be said about a particular style, school of training.
Are you talking about stylistic or actual technical you know?
Well, both, but more style, I would say. Like the great tradition of the Philadelphia Orchestra mm-hmm. here and our string sound, and those are all things I hope that we can just keep and aspire to keep, you know, it's just such a wonderful thing. And so, I mean, I didn't mean to digress in that path, but that is one of my concerns about the world getting smaller. And so that was just a side to what you asked.
Yes, but
me.
You think about things like that. I've spoken to you before, and you do have a vision of what you really want and mm-hmm. what you'd like to pass on to students. And I think that's very important because the harp repertoire is not very, very big to begin with. But you know, it has been expanded, and certainly with the instrument, it has been expanded. You recently were on tour with the orchestra, but you also told me that you would be playing in Asia. Is that right? As a soloist? Is that
well?
What you're playing
today? Not as a soloist without the orchestra. I'm going to be playing for some kind of a international harp festival in Beijing. And the orchestra has its new residency that we'll be starting this May in Beijing. And so we have this new partnership with China that was just announced
wow.
by our CEO. And so we're going to be making regular appearances in China. And I certainly hope that I get to know all those harpists over there. And I think it's a wonderful, elementary community of harpists, because really they've had very little from Western teaching there. And the influence is, a lot of it's Russian.
Well, it's also kind of, I was surprised to find out years ago that many, many emigres from Russia went to China during World War II. So there's a very strong Russian mm-hmm. school of piano playing.
Yes.
So you say, well, how did that happen? Well, it happened because mm-hmm. people went. So I would imagine that you're going to have that with the harp as well. I think you may find that there's certainly a place for it.
There is a place for it. I mean, what I was talking about just a moment ago, I don't mean to contradict myself, but there really isn't a school of playing yet for Chinese harpists. I mean, there's just very few, people teaching there. There's some wonderful Chinese harpists that were trained in the U.S. and then they went back to China. And but now it's growing, and there's so many people wanting to learn to play the harp.
Well, of course, you know, they also have their own instruments. The Asian instruments are strictly different instruments that have mm-hmm. different repertoire, different technique. The harp that you're talking about is it's Western.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we play music that is really Western pretty mm-hmm. much. And even if it's, now you, speaking of, you have a new work. Is it Tan Dunn who you've commissioned to write a harp concerto?
Well, yes. I don't want to speak prematurely, but we have, been working with, sketches he's come up with already for the concerto, and the Philadelphia Orchestra And we've commissioned him to write this piece, and we might be sharing the commission. There's still a lot of gray mm-hmm. area there. But we will be doing it at some point, and he's very excited about it. And what little I do know about it is very interesting. And he's planning on the whole idea of the piece is this forgotten language that is only spoke by these women in this very small mountain town. Mm. And it's a women's language. And like so many of his works are fascinating that way, how he takes something in time and preserves it. And so I think that's really cool. That's a really...
Well, there is a woman's language. But that's very fragile now. So so this is some exciting things on the agenda for you in your spare time. How do you find the time? You are teaching, you are playing, you have a full concert, you know, season. Mm-hmm. Do you ever take any time off?
Well, it's a very rare occasion. We did at the beginning of the summer, my husband and I, and we went to Colorado, just to, you know, unplug for a little bit. And so we do love the mountains. We ski a lot and we love to ski and bike, so occasionally.
Keep yourself in trim for playing the harp so you can carry it, I guess. Oh, Elizabeth Hanen, what a joy to speak with you, so much to find out, and always fascinating to hear your views on what you plan to do and how your plans of expanding the world of the harp and still preserving the history of it and playing so very beautifully. Thank you again for coming to Crossover, and we look forward to your next album.
Well, thank you, Jill, and thank you for being such an advocate of not only me but the instrument. And
well, it's kind of easy. It's nice to find a commitment, you know, because these days the harp, again, is an instrument that is kind of, you know, not appreciated and certainly still not known very, very well by audience goers. And so there's a lot to be taught to people that love music. And again, I can't think of a better person to do it. Thanks again, Elizabeth.
Thank you.